Welcome to Movie Richard's Movie Month, where the Atlantic Voice Network's very own in-house critic, Movie Richard, looks at what's out and about to be out at your local multiplex. I'm Zeph, and here now, the man at the concession stand, Movie Richard. It is May's Movie Richard's Movie Month. Movie Richard, how are you, sir?
I'm good. We're back. I'm healthy. I'm blessed from that perspective. I've not been touching my face, and I'm ready to go.
You say we're back. I do need to reassure the audience out there. We are back, but we're not back together because social distancing means, and here on all Atlantic Voice shows, and especially Movie Richard's Movie Month, we are practicing good social distancing.
Absolutely. So yeah, we're not even looking at each other on the screen. It's all audio. That's how safe we are these days in Fairfax County and this part of Virginia. So. Enjoying that safety as well, for sure.
Yeah, safety is the big thing, and you can't get any safer. I can't think of any pastime that's safer than watching TV unless you have you've not mounted your big screen correctly and it drops off the wall. I don't think there's any pastime that's safer than sitting on your couch watching TV. I think that's a pretty safe statement.
The only one I could think of is sleeping in. That would be my number one.
And
has become the pastime.
I was just about to say, that says something about both of us, that sleeping in counts as a pastime.
Yes, sir.
All right, but nonetheless, we have a packed agenda of things to talk about. And if you haven't listened to last month's show, Movie Richard and I spoke at length about the ESPN, Netflix, NBA triple co-production of The Last Dance, which was the 10-part Michael Jordan documentary series, which is reaching its climax. I'm presuming by the time you might hear this show, parts 9 and 10 would have aired, they will about to be airing if you're one of our fans who clicks in right away. But Richard, since the last time we talked, we're now well into that thing. What are some of your thoughts about it? But you know, in general, about it as a piece of TV, about it as a story, how are you enjoying it?
I'm loving it. And I think that, as we were kind of saying at the end of our last show, one of my favorite pieces is it's going to set a precedent for what these look like moving forward. The storytelling is incredible, and the way that they've been able to take something that we're all to a certain extent familiar with, one season, 97, if nothing else, you know, he won a championship, and really not only making that timeline from multiple perspectives feel alive, but bringing in so many familiar faces that as they are now and looking back, and also kind of seeing how some of the people are still affected by when they speak about these events. It's like when you meet with your buddies and you're having a high school reunion, or you're having a college reunion, or maybe even just a coach's reunion of people that you've worked with in the past, and you fall right back into the roles that maybe you had when you were working with one another or when you were playing with one another. It's cool to see that, but also I think I may have underrated how serious it can be, and I'm starting kind of with we're going to cover a few of them just over the course of the convo, but the Isaiah Thomas Bad Boy Pistons versus Jordan scenario was just eye-opening to me. Just the idea that physical play, first off, guys were just tackling each other in that time period. I mean, it was a whole different level of basketball. And just seeing what Michael Jordan went through with that team and how much it affected him and how much Isaiah Thomas's relationship with Michael Jordan was affected by something that happened at this point almost 30 years ago. Yeah, it's just incredible. Just a level of detail. I've really enjoyed it. I really have.
You talked about that personal aspect of it, and let me refresh quickly for people who might not have started watching it yet, or they have it backed up on their DVR and they're waiting to get to it. It is very much, obviously, this is a profile of Michael Jordan, but it is also for me. And I remember, you know, obviously there is a small age gap between our star and yours truly. I lived through it. I actually loved watching the Pistons. You know, I used to go to Washington Bullets games. I actually went to a playoff game, the Bullets against the Pistons in round one of the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think it was the year that the Pistons lost to the Lakers in the finals. So I did enjoy that era of the NBA, but I wasn't a Chicago Bulls fan. Is in terms of Michael Jordan, do you believe, obviously we're all getting to know him better, but how well, how, and I want to be careful the words I use here, but you know, any person who sits in front of a camera presents a certain image of themselves.
Yes. Yes.
How, and I don't mean honest in meaning, I don't want to use the word honest to at any moment mean dishonest, but how honest a portrayal do you think Jordan gives of himself?
Well, I think that what I've accepted is, even though he's had his hand on in it by choice, clearly, regardless of how honest I may personally think he is in each situation, which he seems fairly genuine, I've accepted that it is the most honest Michael Jordan we're ever going to get. This is as much access as we will ever have to him. So
let me ask you, and you used a great word there. And I don't for a minute, I'm not suggesting he is not being at any moment genuine. Yeah. But in terms of access, how much access, ultimately, are we getting 80% of the real Michael Jordan? Are we getting 30% of the real Michael Jordan? I mean, from him, how much of him do you think he is putting out there?
It seems like it's above 70. I definitely think that if the way I would describe it is like if we were all to watch it on a streaming software, something like Twitch, we're all watching it. If there were a little radar on the bottom right of the screen and it was a percentage that went up and down based on how honest he was being in each situation, I'd say he's hovering over 70% and probably gets as high as 80. And probably gets as low, in my opinion, in certain situations as 60. And I'll give an example of one where I just believe everybody on television was lying about it. And that's the Isaiah Thomas dream team situation. I just cannot fathom with a team that was put together in that way, from that perspective, as a result of losing. You have Michael Jordan. You have Larry Bird. You have Magic Johnson, you have all the names. Kristen Leitner's on the team, the biggest college star of that time, who was chosen over Isaiah Thomas. I do not believe for a second that none of those players were consulted about Isaiah Thomas being on or off of the team. That is one of the moments to me personally, and I'm just a bachelor's level communications major. I do not work for the CIA or the federal or any federal agency. I don't specialize in facial recognition, but I just get this funny sense that they, Magic, all of the guys involved, especially Michael Jordan, are lying about that situation.
That was the most, and interesting, because I'm going to give you two examples of things where, and I think you're on the money with your, you know, that sense of, you know, what that graph looks like as he talks in terms of, you know, I don't think we're getting ever above 70%. And I'm going to talk about two people who I think we're getting more from. When he talked about the Dream Team and his role, or non-role in Isaiah not playing, the little graph was all the way down the bottom there.
I agree.
And I was waiting, and there was a part of me waiting for him, and I would think entirely different. If he owned it, I was waiting for him to at least put one arm of ownership onto it.
Yes.
And if he had, I'd sit here and go, we're getting everything, man, because he owned that.
Yes.
I also felt too, and there are still two episodes to go. I you know, so much has been written and said over the years about Michael Jordan's relationship with gambling.
Yes,
and again, I you know, my father was a serious. He's not anymore. I have been to casinos with my dad and watch him empty his wallet. I bet on horses because I was exposed to that. When my dad every morning at the breakfast table would go through the paper and decide where he was spending his money that day. I just find he was very nonchalant about his relationship with gambling.
Yes.
And nonchalant to the stage where, and I'm not suggesting everyone is able or wants to give some, you know, deep down psychological reason about why you do it. But he was just, he blew through it in the same way that I don't come to work and tell people that I clean my teeth that morning.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, I just felt like, I felt like that was one thing too, where I'm like, no, you can give any, you can just sit and go, you know, I do it because I enjoy the rush, but I never felt I got any reason. I don't know. It was interesting. Those are, so that and Isaiah Thomas were two moments where I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, we're only getting 60% here.
Yeah. And you know, something that I think that I pay a lot of attention to, some of the subtle things that he says, some of the quicker moments as well, because like there are moments where he's being honest where it's like, man, it's unfortunate in my opinion that that is your perspective. And something that I'm not seeing many people cover, and this is my opinion, and I kind of understand why they're not covering it, because, you know, you're talking about Fox, which ultimately still has ties to ESPN to a certain extent because so many of their former stars are on Fox. So I don't expect Colin Cowherd and former ESPN people to rip an ESPN documentary. On ESPN, come on. You know, they're just going to ask the biggest, funnest, coolest questions about their product. But there seems to be a very unique relationship that Michael Jordan has with other players and admin. And there are these moments where it feels like he's on the side of the players in terms of, we as a whole do not care what our admin are doing, or our general manager Jerry Krause and our owner are doing with Scottie Pippen and some of the players. But also, I also get this sense where it's like Jordan, in certain, to a certain level, almost viewed himself as the administrator of that team and as the leader in terms of making decisions about how it was going to go and what was in the best interest of the team, strictly from his perspective. And that's interesting to me because you hear it come out and he says it in ways where it's like, is that your friend, player, or are you almost saying that like you're a coach? And I'm speaking about, for those of you who watched it, the Scottie Pippen choosing not to go into the game situation, which was recently covered.
Yeah.
Very simply put, Jordan has retired. Scottie Pippen is now the leader of that franchise. And ironically, they're putting together a solid season because his leadership style is in complete contrast to Michael Jordan.
Very different.
And he's passing, he's getting everybody involved, 6'8", dribbling the ball, multiple touches. The triangle looks similar to, and this is from a basketball peer, similar to how the Spurs played early thousands to the end of the Tim Duncan era. A lot of touches. So, and in a playoff game, Phil Jackson's in a rough situation. He has a play that has consistently worked for Tony Kukoc, that he has had success with at the end of the games, a jump shot mid-range, off the dribble or catch and shoot. And he has Scottie Pippen, who's pretty much been the franchise player that whole season. He drew the play up for Tony Kukoc. Scottie Pippen felt extremely disrespected and insulted and chose not to go in, which led to the idea of you quit on your team. And to even make it worse, Tony Kukoc hit the shot. I say all of that to say Michael Jordan goes, well, Scottie Pippen was wrong. He shouldn't have done that. And I'm like, for that to be your buddy, teammate, sidekick, co-superstar for 6 years who gave everything to you and helped you win all of those championships, I was a little surprised that he was so quick to take that attitude, especially since none of us believe he would have been okay not taking the last shot himself.
It is interesting, and you know, I did think about that, and to talk about that incident. Scottie Pippen has been someone who I felt, and again, we're talking about your example of the little graph going while someone's talking. Mm-hmm. I feel with Scottie Pippen that I'm getting to know him so much better than I thought I did. I feel he's been very genuine and open. And while I don't always agree with his thinking, you know, I know that the undercurrent of this whole thing is the notion that he never got enough money. While I don't always agree with that, because I am one of those people that like, well, dude, you signed the contract. If you didn't want to sign it, you shouldn't have signed it.
And they told him not to.
They told him not to. But when he reflects upon that moment, I found his answer slightly confusing, but also quite refreshing in its honesty. He sat and he said, yeah, you know, I'm so embarrassed by that. That wasn't a good moment. I shouldn't have done it. And then he waits a moment, and then someone says, well, would you do it? If you could do it over, would you do the same thing? And he goes, yeah. And I find that contradiction nonsensical, but I also find it
honest.
I really respect the honesty of it.
Yes.
And I found Pippin to be someone who I'm like, oh, wow, I feel like I'm getting to know this dude much better. The graph at the bottom is reading 85% all the time when Scottie Pippen takes.
He's always in the 80s. Yeah.
And I feel the same thing about Phil Jackson.
Yeah, and I would say Jackson.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to cut you off. Mm-hmm. I've always been predisposed to think a certain way about Phil Jackson.
Yes.
You know, the whole, there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors. He's a bit of a BS artist. Now, all great leaders are all those things, sure. But I've been refreshed that I'm feeling like in his very quiet, very intellectual, very intelligent, very analytical way, I also feel like I'm getting 85% every time Phil Jackson speaks.
Yes.
And in a weird way, the show's about Jordan, but out of all the dudes, I still feel that there is a notion of Michael Jordan's image and history being protecting it. And I'm not suggesting that's a bad thing.
But
I find it so much more interesting than other characters, they seem so much more. And again, I don't mean this word as a criticism in the way that you normally mean it. They seem so much more genuine or complete.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? I still feel with Jordan when it's finished, I'm still going to sit there and I'm being like, I still don't know everything that I should know after 10 hours.
Well, it's still ultimately, we have to remember, like, he had his hand in it. He partnered with ESPN. There was already a 97 documentary. All that footage is from a 97 documentary you can find on Amazon for like $3. But how, you know, and that's kind of always been why I've appreciated Floyd Mayweather, because all of who he is always out in the open, good or bad. So he doesn't try to protect his image beyond the boxing ring. Everything else, every interview, every dialogue, now he's doing the big time presentations. You go, that's Floyd Mayweather. He's owning much tougher stuff than like gambling. You're talking about potential domestic abuse scenarios, alleged spending scenarios, et cetera, et cetera. With Jordan, it feels like an Apple or a Disney production. To a certain extent, you're still getting a ton of cool Jordan highlights. You're still honestly getting a ton of advertisement for all of his products. You're getting, if you want to talk about where he's the highest on our little radar that should now be copyrighted, that's a Zeph and Richard instrument. He's at 100%, in my opinion, when he's talking about his work ethic, his killer mentality,
sure,
or things of that nature. Everything else is conditional, and I would say he's in that 70s to 80s tops. And like you said, the gambling's one. But I think the way that he justifies some of the ridiculous stuff that he did to his teammates is also an interesting thing to pay attention to. Because for me personally, it's not that I'm sitting here suggesting that fighting your teammates is the worst thing ever. But I do think that fighting your teammates in the practice setting specifically is almost blasphemous.
It is
interesting.
And his
defense of those things
is
crazy.
It is interesting. And I don't expect anyone to come on and apologize for anything, and I mean that in a very broad term. I don't feel that anyone needs to apologize for anything, for how they, you know, and especially in this instance where the show is about him. So I'm not sitting here wanting Michael Jordan to own anything. What surprises me sometimes though is, I would expect, if you are, for all the things you've just said, if you're going to do this, then this is a moment, not necessarily to show a bit more sense of, yeah, I can get why people don't like that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something, yeah, I was that guy at the time because. Now, maybe he's not that guy. Maybe that's how he approaches life, full stop. But I find it interesting. You're embarking on this big endeavor. You know, it's a bit like, you know, you and I, you know, you both watch action movies and something happens and you go, yeah, you know, that was really kind of moronic. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't jive with everything else that you watch. I'm thinking of a Fast and Furious stunt or something.
I was
like that.
Too. I was thinking about one in particular. Yes.
There are moments in this where I'm thinking, no. In this format, you don't get to get away with that.
Yeah.
Because it then becomes a fine line between, you know, a documentary and an infomercial. And you talked about Floyd Mayweather there and this notion of, it's all out there. It's out there. It is what it is. And I'm interested that even within 10 hours, we still don't get enough moments of that. I still have this overriding sense that this is still the Michael Jordan of 1997, who, you know, when he talked about his view on the North Carolina Senate race, he was like, I didn't want to get involved in that publicly. Now, whether one agrees with that position or not, I respect the fact that he had a position. But it's like, in 10 hours, though, you need to, on a whole, and there are a number of topics, you need to give us more than that. And this is my, and again, you talked about the dream team selection. Well, no, I need a better answer than the one you gave me. Because I'm giving you 10 hours of my time. That's
absolutely.
How
It's there are two things that come to mind, and they're large ideas to a certain extent, but they're separate and they're interesting. And I'm going to touch on what you're saying. Being genuine in 10 hours of content, how open are you? How genuine are you? How honest are you? And what sense does the audience get of any of that? Now, for all of the diehard, I already loved Jordan, thought he was the greatest of all time, regardless if I'd seen him play or not, people, they can latch on to anything. One of the most powerful moments, and I agreed for much different reasons than the public, was when he was opening up at the very end of one of them, and he was like, look, I didn't ask anyone to do anything beyond what I did.
Yeah.
You know, people want to call me an a-hole or this or that or not a nice guy. Well, that's you because you haven't won anything. And you guys were not – you saw what I went through way before these guys got there.
Right.
So for us to win, this is what I thought was right. That is a heavy moment that I appreciated, what I felt was honesty. He teared up, et cetera, et cetera. At the same time, what speaks to what you were saying in terms of honesty is it's hard for me to hear somebody sell the idea of I hold myself to this standard. Everyone needs to do it all the time competitively. And then the spotlight's on you to talk about gambling, the race for the chair, the political chair in North Carolina, a variety of other topics, your leadership, fighting teammates, and he finds ways to kind of pivot quietly and nonchalantly. I just had a lot of money. That's why I was gambling at that level.
Yeah.
And it looks crazy. Yeah, but it's 3 a.m. before a game. You know, like there's a lot of interesting dynamic from that perspective that I thought were like, okay. I think that you kind of quickly moved away from that, but you did not quickly move away from your opinion of your teammates when they weren't doing what they were supposed to. And the other thing that's kind of come to me, Zeph, is, and I was speaking to a good friend of both of ours, Rebecca, about this yesterday. It makes me wonder, what messages are we sending to the youth? And what should leadership look like, and what length should you, as a competitor and a leader and a potential captain of a program, what length should you take your teammates to win? Because I question some of his antics.
It is interesting, and I'm beginning to feel that when this is all said and done, I am not really going to know any. I have been reminded of the man, and again, I was a fan of that generation. I loved watching the Pistons when they won back to back. So I remember all the names and faces across that time. You know, as an active fan, I do not think when this is all over that I'm going to have learned much. I've been reminded of all kinds of fascinating things. But they're all things that I've already known.
Yes.
And to me, I know this is an unfair example because this is Jordan talking. But in a strange way, because I'm going to give you an unfair example, I'm actually going to grade this show harder than the other one. So obviously, yes. You know, the other big mammoth miniseries that ESPN ran was O.J. Simpson Made in America.
Yes, yes.
And after 10 hours of O.J. Simpson Made in America, I have seen things that I didn't see. I have been exposed to new perspectives than I never had at the time. I have seen my own opinions and viewpoints of things change, and I have learned so much more about the subject and about many of the times that I also lived through.
Yes.
Now, these are different animals, but at the end of the day, you are committing the same amount of time to advertise going deep into a topic. Iconic topics. And while, yes, obviously, the details are very different.
Yes.
I do not think that after 10 hours, committed to one subject, I'm not entirely convinced that I'm going to know more about that subject than I did at the time. I'm learning more about other people.
Yeah, we know more about Dennis Rodman. We know more about Dennis Rodman than we've ever known.
But I don't think I'm going to learn more about someone who, to be fair, when you live through it, and any superstar or celebrity or movie star is exactly the same way. They all guard their image. They're all very careful how they want to come across. I mean, look at what happened, to pivot back to the movies. Look at how much grief Tom Cruise got when he was jumping on a couch. And, so he has almost learned the hard way about control your image, control your image, control your image. Jordan was one of the first people in sports to be that control your image, control your image, control your image.
Yes.
I'm just slightly disappointed that now, after the fact, I'm still going to get that rather than anything else.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's not to say this is not a great show.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm only saying that he's not doing anything to change my mind about anything that I lived through then. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not suggesting he should have to do that. But I don't feel like the only thing that I have learned is about his baseball experience.
Yes.
But even then, that's in the words of other people, not in his.
Yes. Which is also interesting how in some of the segments, I will say, or some of the stretches in the film or the documentary, he doesn't speak at all, which is interesting to have. I mean, what is Tony Franconia, I think the Red Sox coach who was there at that time?
Yeah.
What is he really supposed to say in that situation? I'm not discrediting what he said because he knows that sport better than I and they have the numbers to support it. But I am wondering, like, that's interesting that I don't think I heard Michael Jordan actually say, if I would have continued hitting the way that I saw baseball.
No, he never says that, does he?
My numbers.
Which surprises me.
It's interesting. So, I enjoy it. I enjoy a lot of the context that they provide in terms of how great he was, how great that team was, how great the individual pieces were, how each guy, a lot of the guys on the team had their own moments. I've also really enjoyed Steve Kerr, who I think this is going to be good for him because there were a lot of people who were upset about how he inherited the Golden State coaching job.
But you can also also see why he's been very successful there.
Yes.
You can tell by his personality that if I'm in a sport and any pro sport, with the exception of the NFL, is player driven, not manager driven. Whereas the NFL is coach driven. You can see why he's super successful with players.
Yeah, there's not a single athlete who's looking at Steve Kerr right now and says, that's not a guy I would want to play
exactly,
for.
Exactly. It's been revealing to me to see, this is why he's very successful at what he does now. You know, just his personality type.
Yeah, and he still looks like he could hit a jump shot.
He still does, yeah. All right, let's pivot away from The Last Dance. What else have you been watching?
Honestly, the biggest things that I've been watching, some have been kind of comedic. I've been rewatching a lot of Veep. I've been rewatching, which is a hilarious, 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 all-time funny political show, which I think is extremely accurate in a lot of funny ways on HBO. I've been rewatching Euphoria, which I still suggest and say is one of the better shows. I rewatched a lot of the second half of House of Cards. But it's been about Billions recently.
So you are a big Billions fan?
Yes, absolutely.
So we're on to what, season 4 there now? And
yeah,
we
it's
will
been
come,
a few.
I watch it when it's on. Let me. So that's my relationship with Billions. And we will, the next show, when this season, or in a couple of shows, when this season reaches its climax, maybe we'll have a we can go deep into Billions.
Yes,
but in terms of this season beginning, and we're on to year four, is the show, does it still got its pace, or is it losing its weight?
Yeah, it was interesting, and I'm excited to come back to this probably later on another episode. But for those of us who are kind of hip to the premium networks, Stars and Showtime and HBO, there's Billions, which is Showtime, and then you have Succession, which is HBO.
Right.
They're ultimately, in a lot of ways, the same show from two different perspectives, from two different cable providers.
Okay.
One percenters with one percenters issues, Axelrod with Billions being at the top and it being centered around him and his family and his businesses. Succession is a one percenter's family at the top who runs a media conglomerate. So there's some interesting parallels. What I thought initially was that even though Succession is, I don't believe as far along as Billions, Billions in terms of popularity, I thought was way ahead. Succession's last season or so has been massive. So I was interested to see what Billions was going to be like after Succession being named, by HBO. Honestly, some people had it as the number one show of 2019. So Billions, I thought, has come right back at a high level, great storytelling. Paul Giamatti is incredible again. All of the acting from every single performer on the show is spot on. The music's good. The camera work's good. I've always thought some of the writing itself and the dialogue is some of the better dialogue. I would compare it to like the West Wing in the beginning, House of Cards, The Wire, those shows where I look around and go, probably even The Sopranos, where I would go, yeah, the dialogue, the people who wrote those conversations, that's well done. So I've really enjoyed it. And then there's another show that is extremely casual and comedic called Letterkenny. It's like a combination of a down south comedy, but it is in Canada. So that's an interest. And it's just really kind of goofy, but it's funny and relatable for me because I grew up in a small town. And then the one that has really caught my eye, and I've mentioned it before, but it's called High Maintenance. I've never really opened up about what it is. It's the strangest show. It's like a cast that would be on like Friends plus all of the HBO premiums all in one show, like the more realistic ones, not like your Game of Thrones. It's just very New York, and it's just really a really nice guy, a middle-aged white guy who rides around on the bike and like sells marijuana to like all of these like very drastically different characters. So every time he does, you get to peek into their lives. Half the time, you don't even see anything about the substance in itself. And I've just been really impressed with the writing and how they've managed to handle really a story with no story and make it so interesting. So Letterkenny, rewatching some of the popular shows of 2019 and the previous, Euphoria, Succession for sure. Definitely enjoying Billions right now. And I also, on the movie front, watched Capone with Tom Hardy today.
I asked you that question about Billions, and yes, I'm going to throw you a couple of TV shows in a minute, and then we can transition into movies.
Yes.
I have a transition for you. I asked you that question about Billions because Westworld season 3 just completed. And yes, I asked that because that is a series that I've gone from, I think season 1 of Westworld is brilliant.
Yes.
And it is a show that, unfortunately, for better or for worse, there's only one way to go from there. And it is a show now that I watch because I feel like I have to rather than because I want to.
Yes.
And that's the only reason that I asked that about Billions, which is a show in year 3, year 4. You know, I know.
Yeah, it's like year 5. Yeah.
Oh, year 5. Yeah, you know, shows all have they all have moments where they drop off or moments where they dip. There are only a few shows, and we talked about The Wire last time. There are only a few shows that are able to just continually move upwards or start high and end high. And, you know, I only ask that about Billions because my experience with Westworld has been, wow, this has just been a long 4 or 5 year decline over three series from what I thought was something really, really good. All right, so I'm going to throw you two shows, our listeners, two shows that I've been watching. First one is a British show that has been on TV for about 6 years back in England. But because I live here, I've never been able to see it until now when I can watch it on Amazon Prime and also AMC show it at funny hours. It is called Line of Duty, and it's basically about an internal affairs unit in the British police. And there will be a couple of faces that you might recognize, including in season one, a guy called Lenny James, who was in Snatch and is also in The Walking Dead, and you see him pop up in things. And then there'll be a few other actors that you go, oh, I've seen that guy and stuff. But it's one of those, it's a very good, they're like 1 hour episodes. Each season is about six episodes. It always tells the story of the unit's look into a case that might or might not involve a corrupt police officer. And very good. Lots of twists and turns. Lots of people going, oh my God, that dude, I didn't realize. I didn't get that. So that's one thing I've been watching. And then the other thing I've been watching is currently on FX. It's a comedy. And I binged. I didn't watch it when it first came out last year. It is What We Do in the Shadows, which is the mockumentary about vampires living in Staten Island.
That sounds funny.
I binged watched season one on Hulu, and season two now is on FX. And I think if you try and watch it on your cable provider and play catch up, you have to have Hulu. That's very funny. You know, it's that sort of The Office style show. Very funny. I gave it a miss first time because I'm like, yeah, I'm not interested in like vampires and horror movies and this kind of stuff. But it's not that. It is a comedy. It's very, very funny. And it's based on one of the producers and creators is a Taika Waititi. Taika Waititi, who won an Oscar for Jojo Rabbit. He directed Thor Ragnarok. He's also
great film.
I also think he's the voice of like the robot in The Mandalorian.
Yes, I believe that's true.
And the reason I mention that, one, this is a great show. You guys should watch it. Half hour episodes, goes down easy. I think if you've liked The Office or Parks and Rec or any of those type of shows, you're going to like this. But also, I think this week it was announced that he was going to be given the reins to the main Star Wars franchise. And so I wanted to ask you, as someone who likes The Mandalorian that he's in,
yes,
and, you know, you've seen Thor Ragnarok, how do you feel about, you know, not necessarily this guy, but the fact that they've now announced this is someone taking the Star Wars franchise?
Well, it's simple, and I want to catch up our millions of viewers who have, you know, maybe not remember where we ended on Star Wars.
It's only thousands.
Yeah, I mean hundreds of thousands. You know, we're getting close. But I'm sticking to millions. It sounds better. But, you know, I was done with Star Wars. And the last time we really had a deep talk about it, I was honestly like, at that time, there was just nothing you could really tell me, I think, that would allow me to convey any interest. I mean, if you said, oh, Christopher Nolan, or maybe something crazy like Michael Bay, where you go, huh? Or if you were to say M. Night Shyamalan, you go, huh? But what I'm excited about with him taking over is you've mentioned the film that he directed, and I always pronounce his name incorrectly, but the director of Thor Ragnarok as well. Thor Ragnarok, Marvel fan film or not, was one of the better films that I had seen. Especially if you want to speak about comic book films, it randomly incorporated Jeff Goldblum, which was hilarious. It was by far the best Thor film and probably one of the seven best Marvel films made. And it was through a very different lens, in my opinion. So when I was so blown away with how that film was handled, because I'm not a Thor guy. I thought a lot of those Thor films were average, below average, or complete trash. And for him to open up that world and handle so many different topics and colors and scenes and characters masterfully, and like have action, seriousness, drama, the transitions, the segues, the dialogue, it was all spot on. So when you tell me that he's going to be directing Star Wars, I only really think two things. One, that sounds pretty cool. And two, I hope they allow him to be as creative as possible with it and give him a blank canvas to kind of go about Star Wars the way that he was able to go about Thor Ragnarok.
So obviously, I mean, he's in The Mandalorian, and obviously, so he knows Disney, and he knows, you know, he's clearly a, and I know this means so much to Star Wars fans, the hardcore guys.
Yes.
You know, he gets Star Wars, you know, there's like a seal of approval there in that he gets Star Wars.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting to hear what, you know, it's interesting to hear, you know, how you, you know, how you view what he did with Thor Ragnarok, because I do think, you know, the last three movies, you know, we've done them now. They are what they are. The one thing I think they have proved is we can't just keep doing that over and over again.
Yes.
So ultimately, you know, there is the need, or there is a moment for someone to come in. And as long as the people that own the property give him the room, then I think, or him or her, whoever it may be, as long as they're given the room, then there is mileage to be had in Star Wars. Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that is, if that's the question, and to me at this point, when you're talking about major movie franchises that maybe are trying to come from a different perspective or be reimaged or redefined characters, you have to give whoever the head of the project is creative freedom. And as we know, a lack of creative freedom is what drove Dave Chappelle to Africa and to turn down $50 million. Right. So when we speak about creative freedom with Star Wars, if they're just going to have him be the offensive coordinator and they're going to play coach, then I'm not interested. If it's going to be their vision and they're just going to allow him to do their vision, I'm sure I'll see it, but it'll just be because it'll be similar to what you said about Westworld. I'll just be seeing it because I probably feel like I have to. If they allow him to be the head coach, bring his people in, the writing is handled in the way that he sees fit, the visual effects are handled through people that he is comfortable with, I think it could be a massive, massive change and a well-timed change and transition to a new Star Wars that will just be fresh for all of us. And since he does have that stamp of approval, I think that the hardcores need to take a step back and just allow him to also accommodate some of us who are hardcore in terms of we've seen all of them, but not hardcore in terms of we're not reading all of the graphic novels and stuff. Right.
I do think, to your point, you know, he's, and it's interesting, you know, so I referenced What We Do in the Shadows, and it's a US TV series. It's made here, does have some English actors in it, putting on sort of European vampire accents, but It is, he's one of the creators of the show because it was originally like a short movie that he did back in New Zealand, like 15 years ago, basically the same thing, except it was three vampires living in a house in New Zealand. And then he sort of sold the idea, you know, to American TV, but he is very much involved. He writes some of the episodes. So it's very much his baby. He's clearly got, and again, I remember seeing Jojo Rabbit. He's clearly got a sense of humor. So he sort of understands that sort of, I think you can't have a sense of humor without getting the humanity in characters.
Yes.
So obviously, you know, I don't doubt that he's going to bring, he can bring that to whatever characters they decide to go with. I think, to your point, I think the challenge is going to be, well, if you bring that guy in, then you need to let him do it. But if this is just going to be, you know, to use your terminology, he's just coming in to run the offense, then let's not bother bringing him in. Because I think that has been the issue with Star Wars in this sort of new, in its new iteration. I don't want to criticize J.J. Abrams, but ultimately, you know, if let's look at three Star Wars movies, the three of them, the two done by J.J. Abrams, the one thing that everyone says is, well, you know, the kind of sort of retreads. Well, you know, fair or foul, that's what J.J. Abrams does quite well. He does pastiche and retread and homage to other people well. People got unhappy with the middle movie because it was done by Rian Johnson, who did Looper and did Knives Out. But my feeling is, well, if you bring that guy in, then what did you expect? Because he tends to be, he likes to push things in different directions. That's who he is. And so my notion here is, if they're bringing him in, then they need to let him do it. And then we can all live, whether it's the casual fan or, as you yourself said, the hardcore fan, we can all live, we all have to live with whatever he puts out there.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise, let's not bring him in. Let's just get Joe No Name director to do it. And have the Disney execs, here's the script, this is what we want, make sure you've got this, make sure you've got that. And then let some dude go and do it. But don't bring in one of these people who clearly have a vision and a style if you're not going to let them do it.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what I'll be interested to see, because I think that sometimes even the slightest adjustments to major franchises when they're kind of being re-imaged or they're transitioning away from the past can be a game changer. And the first thing that comes to mind is a film that we'll probably be covering shortly, how they changed Jurassic Park from being the primary focus being the story centered around the animals, I mean the dinosaurs themselves, to it's now has a star in Chris Pratt, who is a part of the story at the same level as the dinosaurs themselves. That subtle change, which kind of now is the new generation's Jurassic Park, is Chris Pratt in it, has that is a part of it. That is how they envision and what they know of Jurassic Park. That was just a simple change that has grossed that franchise another billion or $2 billion. So if you give somebody who was as creative as they were with as he was with Thor Ragnarok, the Star Wars budget, the Star Wars space in the same way that he had with Marvel, because it's all Disney, and just the time to put it together the way that he wants, I think it will be masterful and fresh, and that's what Star Wars needs.
You mentioned that you'd watched Capone with
yes.
Tom Hardy.
Yes.
So how was that?
Well, so we're in the situation now where the people like myself who love going to the movies, who actually go like more than 5 out of the 12 times a week with our passes, we have to kind of accept movies however we can get them now. And it's like we've previously discussed, it can be a little frustrating because a lot of them are being flooded into a variety of streaming services. A lot are being postponed. And this is one of the few that they just were able to take and go straight to VOD or on demand.
So it never made it to the movie theater.
It did not. They were going to have it released in the movie theaters. Clearly, they cannot do that because of the circumstances. So it's Tom Hardy playing Al Capone, another gangster film coming out after The Irishman. I enjoyed it. I mean, I thought his acting was incredible because what it's covering, and I was a little disappointed, I kind of wanted to see Al Capone get his Irishman, which I wanted to see the kid from the second he grew up to the end of his life.
Okay.
Tom Hardy is portraying Al Capone in the very final year of his life. Just really quickly for those of you guys who are not gangster aficionados, he'd already served his time. He'd already done a lot of his most horrific crimes. And in the 10 years that he was held in prison, he kind of lost his mind and his health to a certain extent. So he was released under government assistance to Florida. And they were pretty much saying, like, look, this old former gangster is no longer a threat. So what you're really dealing more with in this film, it's not an American gangster and it's not an Irishman where you're starting in the beginning and then ending in that place where he is now. You're beginning in the end. He's sick. He's old. They're already taking stuff from the house so they can, so they can pay the banks to maintain the house. That is the Al Capone that you have. And there are flashbacks and some cool things that you see. But Tom Hardy's acting itself has been good. I would say the film and the writing has also been, I would say, above average for the most part. I'm just a little bit disappointed with one of the biggest, most well-known gangsters of all time kind of only being shown in that light, because he's pretty much senile and slobbering over himself at this point in his life. And it's an interesting, it would be like a Superman film being made right before Superman was dead. He was old and washed up and the kryptonite had worn on him for thousands of years and he could barely fly. That's what this feels like. So it's a really interesting switch, in my opinion, or break from our traditional gangster films that I think show the gangsters rising to the top, not starts them after they've already fallen.
Tom Hardy, super intense actor, very talented
yes.
actor.
Yes.
He has, I remember when, obviously he is the new Mad Max, but ultimately yes. he's almost a secondary character, not actor, secondary character in that movie. He also played the Cray twins, who were gangsters from the East End of London.
Great film.
Where he played the two twins. He was terrific as those guys. He's great in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Are you convinced by his portrayal of this act of this character, actor, real person at this stage in his life? I mean, you know, where, you know, in terms of his performance, does Hardy sell it to you, or are you always conscious that you're watching Tom Hardy? And I will say this, you know, he's not in The Untouchables a lot, but I remember when I saw De Niro in The Untouchables, I forgot that it was Robert De Niro. Does Hardy deliver along those lines? Are you watching in the way that when you watch Ad Astra, I'm watching Brad Pitt? And I don't mean that as a criticism. Are you watching Tom Hardy, or are you watching someone attempt to bring a real person to life?
Well, it feels like you're really watching somebody attempt to bring a legend in his own right to life. What I actually appreciated is in the beginning, I mean, Tom Hardy, I think, has in a weird way that perfect combination, if you're an actor, if you're in entertainment, of like strong features in his facial features, but like they're also very subtle. So you are aware that it is him, but as the movie progresses and you see him from different angles, you do kind of forget that it is actually Tom Hardy. And that was really refreshing, because like I said, we're in a time period where all of the movies that I've wanted to see have been postponed. Even the movies that I wanted to see next year have been delayed. So to kind of be fortunate enough to get your hands on something like this, a big time production with a big time actor who also brings his present level performance, as he's efficient, it's sharp, it's all of what he needs it to be. He brings all of that character alive, and I appreciated it. I was just a little disappointed with the timeline that they were using. And that's kind of the funny thing a buddy of mine was joking about with The Last Dance. They're like saying sometimes it bounces around so much that if you check your phone, you may forget where you are. And this one, I kind of wish that it bounced around more like The Last Dance does. Show me a little bit more of him, why they are afraid of him. Show me why, you know, even though this guy's pretty much senile, peeing on himself and pooping the bed, why the government still has plants on him and has his entire house wired. I think they could have dove into that more, but Tom Hardy himself, to me, just added another one to his list in the same way that Adam Driver has. Just another great film from an underrated actor who's honestly top 5, top 10 right now.
I'm very unadventurous, so all I've done is rewatch things I've already seen. But interesting enough, to your point about Tom Hardy and playing Al Capone and a look at a real person, I rewatched Rush, which was the movie about the two Formula One drivers, Niki Lauda and James Hunt, which obviously I love that sport, so I was interested in that. But it was interesting, having seen it and then seeing Ford versus Ferrari, which we both liked, and then watching Rush again, even though there's only 2 years apart, I think Rush missed an opportunity that Ford versus Ferrari took, in terms of just how they, you're either interested in watching cars go fast or you're not. So I get that that's a tough sell. But Ford versus Ferrari seemed to do it in such a way that kept gearheads happy, but also didn't alienate casual fans.
Absolutely.
I felt like that's one area where Rush could have done better, but the performances of, I think it's Daniel Brühl and Chris Hemsworth, are terrific. And then I also rewatched Zodiac, talking of real people.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the David Fincher movie, which it's only when you watch it again that you realize that's a star-studded cast. There's all kinds of people in there.
Is that Jake Gyllenhaal?
Jake Gyllenhaal. Robert Downey. Mark Ruffalo. Anthony Edwards.
Good film, man.
A good film. And ultimately, for me, and if you haven't seen it, then I'm gonna be a spoiler here. By the fact that if you've seen it once, you know how it's gonna finish. And so when you watch it again, there's no way around that type thing.
The fact, yeah, it's you know, not.
I don't want to give it away, but that does hurt. But it is a great, just terrific actors and terrific scenes. And again, a whole load of other faces who you're going to go, oh my God, he's in it, he's in it, she's in it, he's in it. So really enjoyed that. Is there anything? So what? Let me ask you as we get towards the end of the show.
Yes.
You know, yeah, the cinemas ain't open anytime soon. So what's on your list to hunt down? What are you curious to either see for the first time or rewatch, or what are you going to hunt for across our streaming services?
Well, I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'm going to give you two things. I'm going to first give you a quick list of all the things that I was looking forward to that are not coming out.
Okay.
So my entire, not even, and guys, I want everyone here to know, this is not even covering sports. We're not even covering the sports events or the fights, just films that that are being delayed that I was interested to see. Jurassic Park, done. The new Jurassic Park, Fast and Furious, Tenet, which kind of seemed to me to be a James Bond-esque type film. But
I am disappointed
star.
That we're not going to see. That's Christopher Nolan. Disappointed we're not going to see.
Denzel Washington's son is the lead.
Yeah.
Clearly the Marvel films, the comic book films as well. Black Widow, Wonder Woman. Very upset about that. Antebellum, which was done by, I believe, Jordan Peele, which had that kind of eerie Get Out Us slash Us type feel. Halloween, just a fun one to watch. This is for all of my educators out there, Mulan. And if you're sped, you know why, and I'll leave that there.
did you mention Top Gun?
Oh, I'm getting there.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
There. I have 19. Oh, no, I have 19, so I'm trying not to give a paragraph about each one. The Infinite. Spoiler for sure on Top Gun. That's one of my primary frustrations. But The Infinite, Mark Wahlberg, kind of in a military film kind of feel, but he realized that his hallucinations were real. Seemed like that was going to be a lot of fun. Monster Hunter with the lead from Resident Evil, who is for better or for worse, Resident Evil is the most successful gaming franchise to movie transition we've ever had. Monster Hunter would have been all of the dragons you wanted to see in Game of Thrones with a much better storyline. No shot there. Candyman, classic horror film from the 90s. A Quiet Place 2 with Emily Blunt. Just think she's underrated. Thought the first one was a great film and was excited for this one. Clearly No Time to Die. Not much to say there. Extremely disappointed with that. Long time to wait for that one. A fun one for me and the buddies wouldn't be able to do it with social distancing, but Godzilla versus Kong, just because I like the last Godzilla film. The Eternals, if you know anything about Marvel and you know what they were doing with that film, that is a huge disappointment. New Mutants, the first horror type film using comic book characters. And finally, Top Gun, which I was so excited to see. I'm a Top Gun guy. The movie came out whenever it came out, forever ago. I probably watched it one time as a kid, fell asleep, bought every airplane simulator, Ace Combat for all my PlayStation fans who are real fans because of Top Gun. Was so excited to get to see Tom Cruise bring that role back. As well as having the new Mission Impossible 7 and 8 come back. I'm a big Tom Cruise guy. I don't know where Edge of Tomorrow Part 2 is, but I'm disappointed. I'm really disappointed with no Top Gun. So those are the films that I'm not going to get to see. And as far as the films I'm going to be hunting out, just all the shows I'll be hunting out, just all the big-time premieres that are coming out this summer. Billions is going to be huge. All of the premium networks pushing out their shows a little bit earlier. I'm excited for all of them. For those of us who are into the modern day Wire, that is Power for those of us who keep up. Power is releasing like 5 different new shows. Huge props to 50 Cent. So I'll be watching all 5 of those. That's going to be my summer. Continuing to put on weight, lose it, playing a lot of video games, sleeping in, watching Billions, complaining about the movies, And I guess also now I got to add to this, standing outside or sitting in the car waiting for food from restaurants. Did that for the first time. Would not recommend. So
it is tough, isn't it? But I'm still committed. I'm still committed to ordering from restaurants. But my only rule has been, I'm trying to continually use the local one-off place rather than the chain. And I'm not knocking the chain.
Are you going? Are you Uber eating?
No, I actually like to go. I have a hang up about Uber eating in that I'm not sure. I'm still like lost in time of the old, like, yeah, you call and someone else is delivering it. Yeah. And then it takes an hour and a half to come. Yeah. And who knows? Whereas I'd much rather go, I will pick it up. And then if I'm there in 15 minutes, then I know they cooked it in the last 15 minutes. Only because I don't, there's nothing worse than, you know, if it be Chinese food or pizza and you're super excited and it comes and it's just a little bit cold. And I'm like, no, I can go and get it. Yeah, so I've become a go and get it point. Guy.
Yeah, Uber Eats, and I know you guys are listening because everyone is. For those of us who are at the platinum level of Uber Eats, which I will not say what that means. To Zev's point, when you order some food that the time that it was cooked is a big deal, Uber Eats, please don't have a notification pop up saying that I saved money because it's going to be a part of a 3-stop ride. Steaks need to come directly to me. So that's the nicest way I can say that for sure.
So Uber Eats, we're going to give you a month. And then,
figure it out.
Movie Richard is going to now rank, has there been an improvement?
Yes, absolutely.
This has been May's show. We'll be back in June. Who knows what we'll be talking about in June, but we'll have some fun. Movie Richard, say goodbye to your audience.
Absolutely. Hey, everybody, take care of yourselves. English Premier League, I'm excited to see you again. Basketball, I'll take it. Easy championship for LeBron. Everyone stay safe. Take care.
This has been Movie Richard's Movie Month, a production of the Atlantic Voice Network. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice, via email at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com, and on the blog at AtlanticVoice.net. Movie Richard's Movie Month.